I want to move on to another redistricting issue because it could potentially affect the makeup of the General Assembly itself. We're obviously still waiting for a ruling from a separate panel of federal judges that this is the remediation phase of the 28 state house districts that were ruled illegal racial gerrymanders. And 19 of those, sir, as you know, are in the House. So, Speaker Moore, obviously this is an election year. Are you worried any kind of redistricting could threaten the Republican supermajority in North Carolina's House of Representatives?
You know, my belief is if the redistricting is done in a fair manner, which we've done, that we will hold our majority. I feel confident we'll hold our supermajority. But I mean, it's a numbers game, as you know. I mean, we have 75 members, and if we have a net loss of 4 seats, then that takes away the supermajority. And if you look historically at our state, it is actually rare in some cases for one party to maintain a supermajority for a long period of time. And the way that's done, you know, maps are maps, but you can't draw that. You can't make that happen with maps. That's determined on election day. And I think the reason that we're holding our supermajority and we've done so well is because the voters agree with what we've done, and they see that they see where we are as a state. I mean, we're exceeding all expectations. We just got ranked the number one state in the country for business by Forbes magazine. We've got some of the lowest taxes, some of the greatest growth. And I don't mean to get off your question there, but I think that ties back to when you talk about the electoral choices and the results. The voters are voting based upon what they're seeing, and I submit to you they like what they're seeing in a Republican General Assembly.
And I would like to ask you some questions about the economy, sir, in just a moment. But I do, since we're talking about redistricting, I do have to bring up the final flavor of redistricting that seems to be happening now in North Carolina, and that is the potential for judicial redistricting. Now, you've already got, the General Assembly already has these other two redistricting issues up before it. We're still waiting to find out exactly what happens there. But Republican Representative Justin Byrd has been leading a charge over last session and now continuing. And the House did pass a measure to change the electoral districts for judges in the state. Why do we need to do this now? And why not task the state commission charged with doing this to do it? I understand it has not been done in decades, I believe, since the Eisenhower administration. But why not use the actual, you know, mechanism that was designed to do just this?
Well, of course, the Joint Judicial Redistricting Committee is the fourth committee where House members are considering these, what I would say, are overdue reforms. This process has actually been very deliberate. You know, it started last long session. It's passed the Judiciary Committee. It's passed the Rules Committee. It's passed the Redistricting Committee. It's now in that joint committee with the Senate. And to your point, the last time this was done, that the districts were redrawn or actually or looked at really with a serious eye, was back in the 60s. And so it's been 50 years. This state's changed dramatically. Now, there have been piecemeal changes along the way. You know, districts moved here and there. But it's not kept up with population growth. It's not kept up with caseloads. So we have the data. We have the data that tells us what's the caseload, what's the population. We have all of that readily available. And that's information that these committees have actually been using in coming up with these districts. I mean, I promise you, they didn't just look at the map and either try to draw, you know, do a Rorschach test or just start throwing darts. They said, okay, these are the districts that we presently have. Do they most efficiently administer justice and make best use of our state's resources in doing so? And there are some that clearly don't. And, I mean, really what you're getting to is a couple of things. Those who don't like it are simply those who don't like the results of the change. They want to keep it the way it is. And anytime you want to make change, there's going to be those who want to oppose it. But we need to reform our judicial system. And the biggest part of fixing that is making sure that the way you've assigned judges and the districts actually makes sense.
But I do have to go back to the core of the question. Why not fall back on the commission whose job it is to do redistricting? Why does the General Assembly have to do that job for them?
It's the responsibility of the General Assembly to draw the districts. Every time districts have been changed, ever, the state has, the General Assembly's done it. There's not a standalone separate committee anywhere in state government that draws these districts. That is exclusively the province of the state legislature.
I'm speaking with Speaker of the House, Tim Moore, and let's move on from redistricting to another major issue here in North Carolina, which is known colloquially as the class size fix. Now, districts including Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District want lawmakers to take another look at the law taking effect this coming year that reduces kindergarten through third grade class size. Smaller classes are great for students, but smaller classes also mean more classrooms are needed, as are more teachers. Without more money, districts say they may have to end programs like music, art, and PE to pay for all this. Now, I know the House and the Senate disagreed about ways to fix this. So I'm curious, Mr. Speaker, what would a possible compromise class size fix look like?
If you don't mind, let me give a little background on this, because this is our lower class size reforms have been in the planning stages for years. This isn't something that just somebody threw on a table and said, figure out. This has been something that's been talked about for many, many years, and schools knew to prepare for this. Now, we've already passed a class size fix bill, which you just alluded to in your comments, in House Bill 13, which would delay the implementation of the class size reductions to give the school districts additional time. And, you know, we spend $1 billion, $1 billion more annually each year now than we did when Republicans took control in 2011. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been, from day one, if it was $2 billion, I'd be hearing the same thing, because it seems like there's just never been enough education funding. But, you know, what we're trying to do is we've provided time, flexibility, and resources for these local school districts throughout this process. We're continuing to listen to them, to work closely with them. I'm going to be meeting with my local school folks next week on some of this. I do think that this, a lot of the concerns that I've heard from many districts tend to be in some of the urban districts or the districts that are more rapidly growing. Well, guess what? Those school issues about classes and having facilities and that's going on anyway, just because they're growing so much. And that's where the counties ultimately in those districts have to step up and provide the capital facilities for that. I mean, that's it's a multi-funding approach, right? You've got the state that's principally in charge of paying the cost for the teachers. Mm-hmm. And the counties are supposed to step in and provide the resources for the schools. So it's a partnership. The state can't do it all, but we're doing a lot more than's been done in the past. And if you look at the last 10 years at where we are on teacher pay, I mean, it is it's astounding.
Finally, Mr. Speaker, I do want to talk more about the state's economy. And by many measures, the economy is looking great. But the downside is that the state continues to lose out on mega projects like the recent Toyota Mazda plant, for which North Carolina was reportedly a finalist. We seem to be the bridesmaid state when it comes to auto plants or major manufacturing like Boeing. So I'm curious, what do you think can be done to lure these kinds of plants to North Carolina in the future?
You know, we've had great economic news all around. As I mentioned earlier, Forbes ranked us the number one state in the nation for business. Mm-hmm. We've now got some of the lowest taxes in the nation. Our unemployment is at a record low. The biggest complaint, in fact, that I hear from companies now is making sure that they've got enough workers to fill jobs. And so we continue to work on workforce development. But your point about the mega projects is one that is one that we continue to work on. I will tell you, in this case, the General Assembly and the governor worked very closely with the Economic Development Partnership, with the Commerce Department. We were all on the same page trying to get Toyota to North Carolina. I'm disappointed, like many, that did not happen. But I will tell you that the incentives package we had on the table was a little over $1.3 billion. That's the biggest incentives package in the state's history that we were prepared to offer. It's actually a larger incentives package than what Alabama ultimately had. But the reports that we've gotten from Toyota were that it was a logistics issue. They already have another facility there in Alabama. They have a facility not too far away, I believe, in Tennessee. But at the end of the day, the reason we didn't get Toyota was over logistical challenges and costs that they would have in trying to get supplies and ship vehicles, which, as you could imagine, would be quite considerable.
And one of the key things about these mega projects is they're particularly good for rural areas of North Carolina. And whereas the urban areas are doing quite well, there are still some rural areas that are struggling. Now, the economic news there lately has been much, much better, but it still could use some help. You mentioned $1.3 billion in incentives. Is that stuff that may be used now to continue to lure more jobs to rural North Carolina? Or, and I'm in Charlotte, so I have to ask this, is this something that is going to be rolled up into an incentive package for hopefully Amazon's HQ2?
You know, we would love to see Amazon locate in North Carolina. I think it would be a perfect fit for Amazon and for the state. When you think of the size of that project, it's roughly 50,000 jobs. Now, the 50,000 jobs does phase in over 17 years, so it's not just, you know, an immediate boom, 50,000 jobs. I mean, that would, I don't know any area in the country that could just immediately fill 50,000 jobs. That's in just a matter of, you know, a year or so. So that's a 17-year end phase. But what we've done to not only try to lure a project like Amazon, but other kind of high-tech companies, is we have some of the best R&D tax credits out there. We've really invested in workforce development for those folks in the tech sector. We've got a great resource through our universities to provide that higher education support through research, through grants, and through collaborative efforts. The overall tax environment, you know, we've got that, I think, about right. I think we're in good stead there. And so your point is dead on. You know, I live, as I mentioned earlier, over in Cleveland County, two counties over from Mecklenburg. We're definitely a rural county. We're not growing nearly as quickly as Mecklenburg. We're on an uptick, but we're not growing like that. A lot of rural areas, you know, the further away you go from any of the urban areas, you have counties that are really struggling. And I think the key, though, is when we're coming up with any economic incentive package or any overall economic development strategy, that while we need to do everything we can to boost the rural areas, we don't need to just disregard the urban areas. We don't need to punish the urban areas because, let's be real, right? When Amazon is looking, or any other company is looking at North Carolina, presumably they're going to be looking at one of our major urban areas, you know, a Raleigh area or a Charlotte area. You know, they're probably not going to be, you know, looking at Halifax County or going up in the mountains and looking at Macon County, because they're looking for an urban area. So you don't want an economic development package that is going to discourage a company like that, you know, from coming to the state because you won't do anything for the urban areas. That's just crazy. So the key is striking the balance between making sure you have a very robust economic development package for the rural areas, but also recognizing that you've also got to be in the game for the urban areas as well.
Tim Moore is Speaker of the North Carolina House. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.